forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello and welcome to Works Do. It's July 11th, 2011, and this is episode number 14. I'm Kate Gase-Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. Today's episode features an interview with Jennifer Peters. Jennifer is an American based in South Africa. After working for 15 years in the public health sector, she is now an entrepreneur, battling it out in the highly competitive skincare industry. Here's the interview. I am talking today to Jennifer Peters, who is a co-founder of Savan Organic Skincare. Jenny, thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with your current endeavor. Can you tell me a bit about Savan, what it is, and what prompted you to start it?
Yeah, Savan is a certified organic and ethically sourced skincare brand, luxury skincare brand from Africa. Gosh, what prompted me to start it, as you know, I started out my professional career at 21 in development, focused primarily on women's reproductive health, HIV prevention, family planning, safe motherhood type stuff. And I guess really to back up, even that career choice was a bit haphazard, to be honest. I was leaving university and most of my friends were off to be lawyers and bankers and doctors. And I think it was about March or April of my final year of university, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And at the time, I was taking a class on sort of, I think it was actually called, and this is really dating us, the ethics of population control, which is a phrase that no one would use anymore. But it was basically about family planning programs around the world and what worked and what didn't. And I got awfully excited reading reports from places like, you know, nonprofits like CARE and Save the Children and the UN about the fact that somebody was out there doing this work. And I didn't just have to be sort of in a library or in an office somewhere in America reading about it or writing about it. I could actually be doing it. And so I started looking into opportunities like that, found myself a 3-month internship in Cambodia. So I went flying off straight from university 6 weeks later to not even post-war, sort of almost post-war Cambodia, and with the expectation that I was going to do 3 to 6 months of sort of volunteer work, you know, internship stuff across the world before I came home and got a real job. And 15 years later, I was still working in development. I spent 3 years in Cambodia. I moved to London, did a master's degree. I worked for a nonprofit in London for a while. And then I switched to a nonprofit called Population Services International, PSI, which is a really fantastic nonprofit that does development work, but from a very different model. They work, they do something called social marketing. And social marketing is the idea of taking sort of commercial marketing strategies and using them for a social cause. So they took needed health products, condoms, mosquito nets, family planning products, et cetera, and figured out how to package them, price them, and market them at a point where they would become accessible to rural and poor third world populations who needed them most. So it was sort of a different approach to development than most of the development world, and one that I found really attractive in that it was more sustainable, more measurable. You could, at the end of the year, measure the number of products we'd moved, where we'd moved them to, who'd bought them, what type of consumer group we were reaching, when they used them, why they didn't use them, what we needed to do differently in our marketing and our distribution the next year to better reach the people who really needed the products that we were putting out.
So I just wanted to jump in and ask, you know, 15 years in this day and age when people change jobs and even careers so frequently is a pretty good stretch. Right. So I'm guessing that you were pretty happy with your public health work. Is that the case? Did you find it very satisfying?
You know, I was. It's sort of a mixed bag. I guess I loved the field work. I loved the opportunities. I really, really loved working for PSI. I loved the ethos behind what they did and how they did it. Yeah, you know, I enjoyed the, obviously from with the background in anthropology, I enjoyed a lot of the travel and the sort of cultural experiences or learning that goes along with, we did a lot of behavior research and market research on what drives people's behaviors and how the decision-making process and things. So, you know, sort of intellectually and culturally, whatever, it was a fantastic experience. But where I found myself questioning my career was in the engine that is the development world and the vast amounts of money that get poured into it and the lack of emphasis on efficacy or outcome of those programs.
So what was sort of the order of operations? Did you find yourself starting to get a little bit dissatisfied and looking around and then you came upon your business idea? Or was it that the idea struck you first and you thought, I am actually ready to move on to something?
It was a combination of things. I was, I guess, 34 when I was leaving Mozambique. I'd been there 4.5 years, and I really probably was ready to leave 3.5, 4 years in, but I didn't know what my next best option was. And I was, you know, I had been by then lived on 4 different continents and 4 different countries. I'd probably worked in 20 by then. It had been a lot of travel and a lot of interrupted life, and it was fantastic in my 20s and early 30s. By my mid-30s, I was starting to think, I could see my life playing out in 5-year stages. You know, this 5 years I'll go to Mexico. The next 5 years I'll be in China. And, you know, and I was never going to have a real grounding. So personally, I was starting to want to have something to call home, a place to call my, to have a base, you know. And I wasn't overwhelmed with the desire to come back to America. It had been so long that I was gone, I couldn't imagine what I would do there. So I was starting to question, I was starting to be somewhat disillusioned with the career choice and feeling like there might be a better way of doing the things that we were trying to do. I was also personally looking for a bit more stability in my life generally.
That little bit of music was to signal a short editorial comment, which is to say that at this point in the interview, Skype unfortunately gave out on us, and we had to resume our conversation on a landline. You'll hear that it sounds a little bit different. We'll jump back in with Jennifer's recollection of the 2-week road trip that she took through Namibia 5 years ago. It was on that trip with a group of 5 friends that included her future business partner, Stefan Hillary, that the idea for Savon was born.
5 of us within about 3 days were cracked and parched and looked and felt about 80 years old. You know, our lips were split and our hands were cracking and our skin was dry. And Stefan was had only these little plastic bottles of sort of goldeny oil that he kept applying himself, and he is naturally a very beautiful man, but he was continued to be a sort of glowing vision of health. And so we finally said, but what is in that, you know, what are you using? And it was marula oil, it's the oil that's pressed from the marula fruits of a marula tree that he had sourced from a community in northern Namibia. And this prompted us to start talking about, you know, the organic and sort of green and natural trends happening around the world. The fact that we were sort of frustrated sitting in South Africa that we couldn't get our hands on products like that, and that there were all of these natural resources in Africa that haven't yet sort of had enough play on an international market or on any commercial market. And so it was there that we sort of had the aha moment, that there was an opportunity to do something in Africa that helped rural communities, that protected biodiversity, that sort of held to all the tenets of everything we believed in doing and approached development from a for-profit instead of a development or non-profit standpoint.
As a serial entrepreneur, I just have to ask, how did you fund things? How did you get things off the ground? Because especially a cosmetics business, it's not virtual. Yeah. You actually had to make stuff.
Yeah. It's a very good question. We very slowly is part of the answer. We both, Stefan was still working on his PhD through that right up until last year, and I have worked as a consultant throughout these 5 years. In fact, in a few weeks, I leave for Pakistan and Angola to do another WHO consultancy. So we still sort of keep ourselves going on the side. In terms of funding the business, we both also invested whatever we could along the way to start the sort of research and development and fund our own travel and market research costs, etc. the first 3.5 years, I guess, up until it was August, September of 2009 when we got our first investment. The rest of our development, we fund, it's all funded.
When I first heard about your business, just one of my thoughts was what an incredibly competitive category to be getting into.
Yeah.
Was that at all daunting to you? How have you gone about thinking about the competitive aspect?
It remains incredibly daunting, yeah. It was only really, I think, when we first went to a couple of big beauty trade shows and then through New York, we realized what we were up against in terms of it being, I mean, probably the most crowded industry in the world, most competitive. So it is daunting. On the other hand, I think that the organic, green, authentic niche is, I don't think we'll ever be a mainstream brand. We never mean to compete with the L'Oreal or Estée Lauder. Not that I wouldn't mind having a balance sheet, but I don't think that that's ever where we're headed. I think that there's a very small and dedicated group of people who seek out good products, good in both senses, good, effective, and good, you know, for the world.
Just one last question, and I ask this as someone who's also went abroad for many years, but I was curious to hear you say, you know, you couldn't quite imagine what you would be doing back in the States. You know, care to elaborate on that? I would think that there's a fair amount of good that could be done here as well. What went into your thinking there?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely not to say that there wasn't plenty to be done in the States. Absolutely. I think, having spent 15 years away, it felt, I don't know how to say it, I feel more at home when I'm not at home in some ways than I do in the state. I just think I've been gone for so long that it felt more natural to be away. And perhaps better said, Africa feels like home. I mean, I guess, you know, something I mentioned before, touched on before, but one of the things that Stefan and I felt really strong about was that we both really passionately love this continent and the people on it and the traditions and the culture and the history and the diversity and the animals and that all sounds perhaps really, I don't know what the word is, but but we both are very passionate about the region and it wasn't a place I was eager to leave. South Africa is a great base both for consulting and for business development. And so I think that that's probably one of the things that we also really sort of strive to do when we set out to start this brand was to produce. It's one of the things that I find frustrating when I come home being America now, is the image of Africa as only crime and HIV and poverty and flies and eyes. And, you know, there's so much more to this continent. It's such a rich and beautiful place that we really also wanted to develop something that represented some of the other facets of Africa that no one seems to see, that doesn't get reported, that isn't in the news, that doesn't make the pictures. And so we really set out to make a luxury product that would stand up to any other skincare brand in the market to combat that. A large part of our website is dedicated to the traditional use of the ingredients that we include, the origin, where they're from, there's a map, there are pictures of them, you know, so we sort of wanted to tell a bit more about Africa.
That wraps up the show for today. Thanks very much again to my guest, Jennifer Peters. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to WorkStew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.